We've got an email here from Greg. Dear Solomonster, I love your podcast, but I'm not fond of your hate for WWE these days. Your Raw reviews are always so negative, you never have anything positive to say about the show. All you do is hate, hate, hate. Huh. Maybe he's right. Maybe I do need to be more positive about Monday Night Raw. And so, the show opened with the announcement of a double main event involving Big Show and Kane. Awesome! I love Big Show and Kane. Two of the most underrated stars on the entire roster. I don't think those two get nearly enough television time. So, the Authority came out for a 20-minute promo. Yeah, I tell you, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. My goosebumps had goosebumps. The New Day, Kofi Kingston and Big E were trying to get the crowd to clap along with them. They weren't reacting, though, but I hope that doesn't discourage these guys. Just a crowd full of racists, that's all it was. The match ended with my all-time favorite finish in wrestling, the Distraction Roll-Up. I believe that's number 17 on the year. NXT wishes it had booking like this.
Ever Snickers?
Why?
Because you get a little bit crazy when you're hungry. Better?
Better. You're not you when you're hungry. Fuck the haters, eat a Snickers.
It's business time, baby.
The Solomonster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
This is episode 370 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here for Fastlane Sunday, February 22nd, 2015. I am the Solomonster. We've got a packed show for you this week, but first, we're running a special offer through Audible, the good folks over there. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster will get you a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Over 150,000 titles to choose from, but you can get the new Shawn Michaels book right now. Shawn Michaels just came out with a new book that talks a lot about some insider stories during his wrestling career, his personal life, his struggles back in the late 90s to where he is today. Sounds like a fascinating read. You can get it right now. At this moment, you can drop everything you're doing and get the book right now for free. You don't have to pay anything for it. You can use our URL to get the book for free. The book is rated 4.5 stars out of 5 right now. And you can buy the audiobook version if you want to for $17.95. But why the hell would you want to do that when you can get it for free? You can listen to it on the way to work, school, at the gym, or, you know what? Here's an idea. Just mute the commentary on Raw and listen to the book instead. I bet it'll sound 10 times better. So go to audibletrial.com/Solomonster. From there, you sign up for the free trial. Once you do that, you can cash in your free audiobook and get the new HBK one. audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Also, if you like what you hear each week, please consider making a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a shout-out and a wrestling nickname. $30 or more, we're doing something new here, $30 or more, beyond the nickname, you can get a quick plug for your own podcast, if you have one. Just include that information when you make the donation. We're going to do the shout-outs, we have a bunch of them, after the mailbag, and I'm going to do it in a fun way this week. A lot of you have donated to the show. Thank you for that, and we'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. And also, just have to give a shout-out to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. You've got 17 different t-shirts up in the store right now. We ship all over the world. You can pay via credit card, via PayPal, whatever is most convenient for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. We were one of the top-selling podcast stores on the entire website in 2014. And our store only went up in September, so we were only up for about three and a half months. That's very impressive. And so hopefully you guys can help lift us to an even more impressive 2015. WWE Fastlane is tonight on the WWE Network, live from Memphis, Tennessee. It is the bridge between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Usually a fairly useless pay-per-view. I would say the same thing here, although they've tried to make the main event important in that the winner will go on to meet Brock Lesnar for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania. And John Cena is wrestling for the United States Championship, something I don't think he's done in about 10 years. Maybe longer, maybe 11 years. So, you know, I can't really say that it's an overly important show, but there are some things on the line here. Let's run through the card. We'll start from the bottom. and we will... actually, you know what? We'll start from the top. Let's just start with the main event. Roman Reigns, one-on-one with Daniel Bryan, winner meets Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 31. Yeah, we've talked a lot about the Royal Rumble, what happened in the Royal Rumble, what an unbelievably dumb decision it was to even put Daniel Bryan in there if he wasn't going to win, considering that their goal seems to be to make Roman Reigns out to be the next big babyface hero to replace old man Cena. And so if that was the idea, and it's not to turn Roman Reigns heel or do anything like that, I still kind of scratch my head over what they did and why they would have thought that was a good idea. There's a million different ways you could have made Roman look strong in the Rumble without winning. But anyway, he won. People were not very happy. And now what they've done over the last several weeks, I think, is they have lessened the reactions to both men. I thought they had a good night on Monday night, but, you know, for the most part, I don't know, neither guy, especially Bryan, really feels as hot as they were even 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I think it just has a lot to do with the booking and mistakes that were made. So here they are in a very unique position here where we could find ourselves staring at a WrestleMania 30-type main event, again, shoehorning Bryan in there, making it a three-way. And you know my thoughts on that. I mean, I'm not at all a fan of having three-way, four-way, six-way main events. I still feel WrestleMania's main event should be a one-on-one match. That's just, I think that's what the WrestleMania main event should always be. It should be a one-on-one, you know, personal affair between two guys with the title on the line. That's what it should be. I think that's really where the money is. And is the real interest in Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar, right? Two big guys, it's a fresh match, we've never seen it before. But would that be a better match than Brock Lesnar against Daniel Bryan? That's the question. I say no. I think if you do Roman Reigns one-on-one with Brock Lesnar, you know, it's not only are you looking at a match that's not going to be as good, but you never know how that WrestleMania crowd is going to react, right? I mean, everybody talks about how the WrestleMania post-Raw crowd, it's all people from England and Australia and all that. Those are the people that are, you know, making a ruckus in the crowd. Well, guess what? Those same people are going to be coming to town for WrestleMania the night before. And so if you give these people a main event that they don't want to see, you don't know how they're going to react. It would suck if people crapped all over the WrestleMania main event. I feel like that's got to be a consideration here. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they don't think it's going to be a big deal. It's not like Roman Reigns isn't over. You know, he's getting cheers. It's not like everybody is booing him. There's been a lot of rumors that it's going to be a three-way. They've changed plans. I don't buy it. I really don't. I don't really buy it for a second. In fact, not only do I think Roman Reigns is winning, I think Roman Reigns is winning in decisive fashion. Daniel Bryan is not being shoehorned into the WrestleMania main event 2 years in a row. I don't know if it's going to be Bryan and Sheamus, or if it's going to be Bryan and Ziggler, or if they're going to put Bryan in the frickin' Battle Royal. I don't know exactly what direction they're going to go in with him, other than I just don't think it's going to happen 2 years in a row. I think they've got their plan. I think that they're set in their ways, and I think Roman Reigns wins this match. I think Daniel Bryan gives Roman Reigns the best singles match of his career. He hasn't had too many of them on pay-per-view. In fact, this might only be the second one he's ever had, the other one being Randy Orton at SummerSlam, which was pretty good. I think it's safe to say that this will be easily Reigns' best match, given who he's in there with. And he's my pick. I think Roman Reigns goes over. I think it's Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Not the main event I would have gone with, but that's their plan. Now, you'll notice here, I haven't mentioned Sheamus' name as far as interfering in the match. That brings me to the next match here. John Cena and Rusev for the United States Championship. There's been a lot of talk about this match as well. Why are they doing it at Fastlane? Why aren't they saving it for WrestleMania? Is Cena going to beat him? Is this the end of the undefeated streak? Could you see John Cena, after all these years, 15 world titles, almost sliding back and holding the United States Championship? Yeah, I mean, I could see it. Anything's possible if they actually wanted to give him something to do while keeping him out of the world title picture and maybe bring some prestige back to the United States Championship in a way that it hasn't had much prestige in years and years and years. Yes, Rusev is undefeated. Rusev has been the champion, but it's almost, you know, I don't know. I feel like the U.S. title's almost been a backdrop. It hasn't really been about the title. It's been all about who can beat Rusev. Rusev was already undefeated. He was already on a roll long before they put the title on him. I can't really sit here and say that it's done much to elevate the U.S. title in my eyes. If Rusev was wrestling in main events defending the U.S. title, that might be a different story. Maybe this is a turning point. maybe they finally have pulled their head out of their ass. They've got John Cena wrestling for the U.S. title. They've got Dean Ambrose, who's still over, challenging for the Intercontinental title, acting like it's a big deal to him, even though it'll probably be forgotten about in 3 weeks. I would love to sit here and give them the benefit of the doubt and say, wow, they're finally doing what we wanted. They're finally going to actually make these titles mean something. I don't think anybody honestly believes that. If they do, it won't be for longer than a few weeks. Why should we? You know, what reason have we been given to think that all of a sudden they've had this great change in philosophy and these titles all of a sudden are such an important thing to them? For one night at least, they feel important. You know what, I'll take what I can get. The question is, do you do a title change here? I think it would be insane. I think it would be absolutely insane for John Cena to beat Rusev on this show. I don't know if the idea is to bring him back at WrestleMania. I would think it is. Otherwise, I don't know who you put in there with Rusev. The stuff with Ryback is dead. I was hoping they would give Ryback a shot. It's obvious to me they've given up on that. I think that was a complete waste. The two of them had one match on TV. It had nothing to do with the championship. They could have done so much more with those two guys, and they crapped the bet on that. I don't know who else you put in there with Rusev, unless you do the idea that I talked about, which is you keep Rusev unbeaten, you keep the title on him, you have Ambrose beat Barrett for the Intercontinental title, and you do two things by doing it this way, by putting Rusev with Ambrose at WrestleMania. You're giving Ambrose a higher profile match than he would otherwise have. Talk about a guy who's lost in the shuffle. I don't know what the hell you do with him at WrestleMania, whether he wins the Intercontinental title or not. So at least if Ambrose wins the title on the show and Rusev retains, you can put the two of them together at Mania. Maybe you let Ambrose be the one to kind of end the streak. That would, you know, bring some luster back to his character. He's been kind of dead in the water now for months. Still over, but boy, has he fallen from where he was just 3 or 4 months ago. And maybe do a title unification. Because you have two titles, I was just talking about it. I mean, I'd like to think all of a sudden they're going to make them both feel special. We all know that's not true. So at least consolidate the two of them into one championship that does mean something and give Ambrose a big win at WrestleMania. I mean, that's one avenue that I might go down. But I think no matter what here, Rusev has to win. Now, I don't expect Rusev to win clean by pin. I don't expect him to, you know, tap out John Cena. I don't even think they would have John Cena pass out. It's like he's incapable of losing a match by submission. So I don't see that happening. What I see happening here, there's been a lot of talk about Sheamus, right? We've seen the vignette. Sheamus returns. They haven't given us a date. The safe bet seems to be that he'll interfere in the main event. And he might. You know what? He absolutely could interfere in the Roman Reigns-Daniel Bryan match to set up a match that Vince McMahon has seemed to have wanted to do for years now, again, at WrestleMania, which is Sheamus and Bryan. He may get his wish this year. Sheamus interfering in the main event is the highest profile way for him to come back. And if he costs Daniel Bryan the match, in theory, it would transfer a lot of the heat. Instead of keeping the heat on Roman Reigns, it's not Roman Reigns' fault that Daniel Bryan suddenly isn't in the WrestleMania main event. It's Sheamus. And in theory, it's a great way to get heat on him if the idea is to bring him back as a heel. So I could absolutely see that. But something tells me that we might see Sheamus instead stick his nose in the Cena-Rusev match. Because if you need a way for Rusev to win, how does Rusev go over? Obviously, it's not going to be clean. So how does it happen, right? I could see Sheamus interfering in the match, maybe behind the ref's back, and he costs Cena the match. Rusev gets the pin. And what that does, it gets Cena away from Rusev. So you don't have to rematch them at Mania with Cena going over. It gets him away from Rusev, frees Rusev up maybe for Ambrose, and it sets up a John Cena versus heel Sheamus match for WrestleMania. Again, I don't know if that's a match a lot of people want to see. The way I look at it, it keeps Cena out of the main event picture. It's okay with me. I don't have a problem with that. And I think because everybody's just assuming that Sheamus is going to interfere in the main event, I'll take a different approach and say that he does interfere on the show, but it's in the John Cena match. And Rusev goes over, he retains the U.S. Championship. And by the way, if you need an explanation as to why Sheamus would attack Cena, it's not like it doesn't make sense, you're pulling it out of thin air. I have the perfect explanation for it. The last time we saw Sheamus on television, he was being beaten down by the Authority. He had just volunteered to be part of Team Cena at Survivor Series, right? He had joined John Cena's team. Well, Sheamus was one of the guys that was out there getting his ass handed to him. It just so happened he was injured in the attack. Nobody came out to help him. John Cena didn't come out to help him. Now the guy lost a couple months off his career. John Cena didn't seem to care. I don't think he's mentioned Sheamus' name one time ever since November. So he's been harboring all this ill will. He comes back. Essentially what I'm pitching here is the same angle that I was hoping they might do with Ziggler. When Ziggler came back from the firing, he would blame Cena. It would give Ziggler a high-profile match at Mania. Obviously, they didn't do that. So, effectively, you'd be doing it with Sheamus. But there's your excuse. You know, if you want to build a story around it, that's all you have to do. So, it's not as though it doesn't make any sense. It's completely out of left field. There's actually a built-in, logical storyline explanation for it if you want to build to Sheamus and Cena. Dean Ambrose and Bad News Barrett for the Intercontinental title. I saw that champs are chumps once again on SmackDown this week. Barrett rolled up and pinned by R-Truth. And I know it was done to further the issues between Barrett and Ambrose and kind of promote this match. But I think it was WrestlingInc.com says that since winning the Intercontinental Championship. Okay, listen to this. Wade Barrett has gone 1-5. In non-title matches. It's the belt of death. Anybody who comes into possession of this championship is worse off because of it. It's amazing. You know, part of me doesn't even want Ambrose anywhere near the Intercontinental title, but we have a pay-per-view here with Ambrose challenging for the championship, trying to make it out to be a big deal. And so I guess we'll see what happens. We'll find out how big of a deal the Intercontinental title really is to Dean Ambrose if he wins the damn thing. I mean, but can you blame me for not wanting him to walk out with the title, even though I think he is? I do think Dean Ambrose wins the championship here. I hope that he doesn't suffer as a result. The Usos against Cesaro and Tyson Kidd. I think Cesaro and Tyson Kidd are well-deserving of a run with the tag team titles. Not only are they a great team, you know what I love about them? We don't see this as much anymore. I mean, the Usos are very good, they do it. But we don't see in tag team matches as much as we used to back in the day this, what Jim Ross used to call tandem offense. So they're coming up with, like, double-team moves. They give it a name. Like, they have moves that they do on their own individually, but they actually have tag team moves beyond just their finisher. That's one of the things I like about this Cesaro Kid team. They've got personality. They've got everything you could want. They're entertaining. They're great wrestlers. God knows they're underrated as all hell. So why not? Why not put the titles on them, give them a run, see what they can do. Hopefully that's what their idea is here. My pick is Cesaro and Tyson Kidd win the titles. Nikki Bella and Paige for the Divas Championship. I'm going to go with Nikki Bella. I don't know. I got a feeling they aren't ready to put the belt back on Paige yet. Maybe want to keep it on Nikki and have somebody else, whether it's Paige or whoever, have the big win at WrestleMania. I don't know. I just feel like if there are going to be other title changes on the show, I guess namely the tag team and maybe the Intercontinental, they may not want to change the Divas. So I'm going to go with Nikki. Then we have Gold and Stardust. God, I'm doing it now. Gold Dust. I keep calling him Gold. Like, Gold is his fucking name. Gold Dust and Stardust are having a match at Fastlane. They did the turn on Raw Monday night, finally, after teasing it and building it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And all this talk now for the last couple of years that the Rhodes brothers were pitching a match at WrestleMania between themselves, it never happened. So, finally, after all this time, they're giving us the match, and it's at Fastlane. This match should not be happening at Fastlane. They just did the breakup on Monday. 6 days ago, they finally pulled the trigger and did the breakup. And already they're having a match. They break up on Monday, they have the first match on Sunday. Now, I'm sure it's not going to be their only match. It may not even be a long match. It may be more of an angle than a match. And it will probably build to a match, a rematch, at WrestleMania, which is where it should be. You know, but part of me just thinks if you're going to do that big first match, it should be a bigger deal. I'm not a fan of doing it on the show. I'm going to go with Stardust. I mean, most people would say, well, Goldust will win and then he'll put Stardust over a Mania. I think he will put Stardust over a Mania. I think Goldust is retiring and obviously he'll have no problem putting his brother over at WrestleMania. But I think Stardust wins here too. You know, maybe come WrestleMania, he's not Stardust anymore. Maybe then it's Gold. You know, Dustin versus Cody. It's not really Goldust versus Stardust. I think he's going to win here, too. I don't see any reason for Goldust to win. I mean, if the idea here is that Cody is younger and Cody has a future, Goldust doesn't. Goldust is here to just work with the younger guys and put other guys over. Then I don't care how many matches he and his brother have, 1, 2, 5, Goldust should not be winning. So I'm going to say Stardust wins here. And then whatever story they concoct, they'll have a rematch, and he'll win that one, too. So he's my pick. And lastly here, six-man tag, Seth Rollins, Kane, and The Big Show. My two favorite wrestlers. Against Dolph Ziggler, Ryback, and Eric Rowan. These baby faces have been so neutered for weeks now. They are so desperately in need of a victory. And I think, actually, they were laid out at the end of SmackDown. So again, they were laid out like a bunch of chumps. It's about time that the baby faces went over here. And there's no freaking reason for Kane and Big Show, whatever match they're part of, to win. Rollins, who cares? It's a six-man tag. It doesn't matter. He's got the briefcase. And God knows he's been booked a lot more strong than not strong. Okay, he's actually, as far as Money in the Bank holders go, he's probably been booked as well as any of the people who have ever held the Money in the Bank briefcase. So he loses nothing by losing this match. I figure they lose, they build some tension or dissension in the authority. Ziggler, Ryback, and Rowan are my pick. And then lastly here, it's Triple H and Sting are having a face-off at Fastlane that will, I'm sure, result in a match for WrestleMania. Here's my plan for this. I was thinking about how this could go. And this was actually something I came up with before I learned that they were adding Big Show and Kane to that frickin' six-man tag match. So even though they have a match, okay, they're still part of the authority. They're Triple H's heavies, right? I figure a good plan for this face-off, after they do all their talking and that, you know, they're done with that. You got Big Show and Kane come down to the ring. They surround Sting. Now Sting is outnumbered. You got Triple H out there, but now he's surrounded by Big Show and Kane. And maybe J&J, too. Sting pulls a baseball bat out from underneath his trench coat. I know we have not seen the baseball bat yet in WWE. I assume they're just not going to probably have him use it at all. Maybe it's not PG, you know, because garbage cans and kendo sticks and all that stuff, I guess that is PG. But it's about time they bring the baseball bat gimmick back. So he pulls it out from under his trench coat and lays waste to the Big Show with it. He lays out Kane with it, beats the shit out of them with the bat, and then points it right in Triple H's face and formally challenges him to a match at WrestleMania. Let Sting be the one to issue the challenge. Because this whole thing, to me, has been ass backwards so far. You've got Sting as the vigilante babyface. And yet it's Triple H, the villainous heel, who's calling him out. And Sting is nowhere to be found. He's like a pussy. Like, he's hiding from Triple H. So let Sting be the one to actually throw down the gauntlet and challenge him to a match at WrestleMania. Stipulation being that if Sting wins, the authority is no more. Okay, this time, for good. No more of this, they go away for 4 weeks and come back bullshit. If he wins, it's in writing, the authority is done, it is finished, and if he can't beat Triple H, if he can't get the job done, then he'll disappear for good, and Triple H won't have to worry about Sting ever again. It would be very hard, I think, in that case for Triple H to say no when he's got a baseball bat pointed at his face. So he's got no other choice but to say yes and agree, and the match is made. That's how I would do it. And then I would have Sting win at WrestleMania, end this awful authority shit once and for all, and then have a stare down with Sting and The Undertaker on Raw the very next night to set up a retirement match between them for WrestleMania next year in Dallas. That's it. Boom. There you go. You want 100,000 people in that stadium? Dallas, Texas, they're going to try to break the WrestleMania 3 attendance record, have 100,000 people in there? You need some real attractions on that show. Okay, the match itself may be shit, but it would definitely be an attraction. You can't tell me that there would be a ton of people who would be interested in seeing Undertaker vs. Sting as just a regular match, let alone if they knew going in that it was going to be the last match ever, for both guys. That, to me, would be a huge attraction. You need more than that. That's not going to be enough. I mean, you would need something like Austin coming back in the main event to, I think, fill that stadium. But that would definitely be an attraction on that show. They could set it up on Raw the next night. It just writes itself. The whole thing writes itself. So that's your Fastlane card. Let's get into some of the news here. One of the bigger stories this week, I'm sure that you are well aware of by now, Dr. Chris Amon, the WWE ZPAC doctor, has filed a lawsuit against CM Punk and Colt Cabana, seeking $2 million in damages. He's claiming defamation and invasion of privacy, and that the claims Punk made against him in the interview on Cabana's podcast in November, quote, falsely impugned his integrity, end quote. Oddly enough, WWE then released this on their own website. They said, in light of CM Punk's allegations regarding WWE's medical staff and the subsequent defamation lawsuit filed by Dr. Amen against CM Punk, WWE continues to have the utmost confidence in the ability and expertise of our world-class team of physicians, including Dr. Amen. CM Punk claimed that during the Royal Rumble pay-per-view on January 26, 2014, he performed with a baseball-sized purple lump on his back located near the waistband of his tights. WWE's investigation has shown the following. CM Punk did not discuss the alleged condition with WWE's team of physicians and trainers, nor did he discuss with anyone in our talent relations department. WWE has no medical records documenting this alleged condition. The first time WWE was made aware of this alleged condition was when we received a letter from his attorney in August of last year. And there is clear video evidence from the Royal Rumble, which allows all to decide whether there is any appearance of a baseball-sized growth on CM Punk's back. The clear video evidence from the Royal Rumble that they talk about here was a 3-minute highlight reel of clips of CM Punk's ass from the Royal Rumble match. That isn't clear evidence of anything other than someone in Titan Tower was paid to create a highlight reel of CM Punk's ass. Think about that for a second. You would think it was the freaking Kennedy assassination, the way they zoom in and they zoom out and all the different highlights here, you know, back and to the left. The lump was back and to the left. First of all, CM Punk responded publicly in a public forum. So now WWE is doing the same thing. Okay, they want to defend themselves. They claim they conducted an investigation and this is what they found. Fine. But to create the video and put it online, to me, proves absolutely nothing. It just makes them look incredibly moronic. You know, yes, there is no baseball-sized lump. If we're being really technical here, there's no baseball-sized lump. But that doesn't mean there was no lump. Punk himself said it was covered by the waistband on his tights, right? He's got the scar to prove that he had something removed. I'm watching this video and I couldn't believe what I was watching. I mean, truly one of the dumbest things I have ever seen. If there was irrefutable video proof that this guy lied, okay, irrefutable, cannot deny video proof, then that would be one thing. But this proves nothing. So why even show it? You want to release the findings of your investigation? Fine. The guy wants to sue Punk? Fine. The video, I mean, truly one of the dumber things I've ever seen them do. And, you know, whether or not the doctor has a case, that's for the courts to decide or a jury. You know, if Amon was prescribing Z-Packs to Punk the way that Punk described, if he was prescribing Z-Packs to him like candy, then there should be a record of that. You'd think that WWE's own investigation would have found that, but they made no mention of that on the website. If Punk has documentation from AJ's doctor, the one who cut off the lump, and he would know whether something like that would take months to form if it left untreated, right? If it was left untreated. It's not like Punk's lying, he had no lump, and then suddenly 2 weeks later he goes to an outside doctor who looks at it and says, you know, oh, you shouldn't have been alive because you've had that thing for 3 months, right? There's going to be documentation of this. A doctor will know, listen, I looked at a lump. There's no way that lump could have formed in 2 or 3 weeks. He clearly had that lump for a long time. Probably should have been dead by now. Okay, there's going to be documentation of that, or the doctor will be able to verify that. So we'll know soon enough, you know, exactly who's lying and who's not, and we'll see where it goes from there. But it's just interesting. In WWE's findings, right, they mention that they have no medical record of the alleged condition. Well, they wouldn't have a record of him having a staph infection if that's what they're referring to. If the doctor never diagnosed it as a staph infection. Now, if the claim instead is that there's no record of a lump of any kind, I mean, that may well be true, but it could easily be a case of the doctor said it was just a fatty deposit. Remember, that's what Punk said. It's a fatty deposit. Don't worry about it. It's nothing to worry about. And why then would he have made a record of that? So WWE could technically be telling the truth with a statement like that. It doesn't mean that Punk is lying. You know, the video was what killed it for me. You know, they say video killed the radio star. I don't know. Video killed this whole fucking thing for me when I saw that 3-minute highlight reel. I'm looking at CM Punk's ass. I'm like, what am I watching? Is this real? I had to check to see what... It was on WWE's official YouTube channel. At first, I thought it was like a gag video. But nope, it's the real deal. They took the time to put that whole thing together. They took all these clips, and they spliced them together. You know? Clear video evidence of there being no baseball-sized lump. Notice they didn't say no lump. Just no baseball-sized lump. Again, they may technically be correct. I think they're reaching on this. I think they're reaching. If one thing is for sure, out of this whole thing, if there's one thing I'm sure of here, I would be stunned to see AJ Lee back on WWE TV. I just don't see how. How could this woman come back now after all this? Unless it's a deal where they just force her to finish out her contract, however much time she has left on it, and then they part ways. I won't say that we'll never, ever see her back on TV, because if I say that, you know, she'll show up on the pay-per-view tonight to help Paige. But I would be stunned to see her back after this. I mean, how awkward would that be for her, let's say, to come back, get hurt, and have to be treated by Dr. Amen? Can you think of a more awkward situation than that? I can't see it. But I can tell you one thing. I would love it if this were to somehow, if Punk gets pissed and they start going back and forth again, I would love it if this brought the independent contractor versus employee status stuff back to the forefront, because that kind of faded into the background. It always happens. Every time that kind of bubbles up again as a story, after a few weeks or a month or whatever, it kind of falls back on the back burner. That's why nothing ever changes. I would love it if this issue somehow, as a result of them deciding to kind of bring this up again, were to come back to the forefront. I mean, would that not be poetic? I would love to see them get their asses nailed to the wall on that. Now, on a different legal case altogether that broke this week, I'm actually going to defend WWE on something. Cassandra Frazier is the widow of the late Nelson Frazier, who you may have known as Mabel, Viscera, Big Daddy V. He passed away a year ago this week, 43 years old, died of a heart attack. To the surprise of nobody, by the way, if you're that big for that long, I know supposedly he had lost a lot of weight, you know, later in life, maybe in the last year of his life or something. But when you're that big for that long, okay, bad things are going to happen. I mean, you tell me, how many 60 and 70-year-olds do you know that are 450, 500, 550 pounds, right? I've never met or known of anybody in their advanced age being that big. There's a reason that doesn't happen. Okay? You can't be that big for that long and not expect something bad to happen. And it happened. You know, had you told me 10 years ago that Mabel would be another young wrestler death and he would die of a heart attack, I wouldn't be all that surprised. So his widow has filed a lawsuit, a wrongful death suit, against WWE. And PWInsider.com, they got a copy of the lawsuit. And I'm just going to read you a little bit from it here. It says, Mr. Frazier died as a result of injuries he sustained wrestling for WWE. Plaintiff seeks compensation for accumulation of long-term chronic injuries, CTE, financial losses, pain and suffering, expenses, loss of enjoyment of life, and intangible human losses suffered by the plaintiff as a result of WWE's willful, wanton, reckless, and grossly negligent and other conduct, which resulted in Mr. Frazier suffering repetitive serious head injuries, brain trauma, concussions, other serious injuries, and eventually the heart attack, which took his life. And the lawsuit says that Frazier was never properly educated as to the risks he took medically, and that WWE featured a culture that sent wrestlers back into the ring when they shouldn't have been cleared. So basically, it's a cash grab. You know, other people have filed lawsuits recently against WWE. This is very similar to the stuff with Billy Jack Haynes. We talked about Big Vito LaGrasso, right? He filed a lawsuit against WWE, blaming them for his own, head problems and concussions, although he spent all of 3 or 4 years of a 20-year career working for WWE. You know, Big Daddy V, at least, did work for a longer period of time off and on for WWE. Although he hasn't worked for WWE now for several years, he continued to wrestle, as Vito does, independently. It's not like WWE is the only place he wrestled. So even after he suffered all of these catastrophic injuries and these head injuries, oh my God, he still was wrestling. You can find results and photos of Mabel on the independent circuit wrestling at different shows. And I don't want to hear, oh, well, he had to make money. What do you expect him to do? He had to make money. This whole thing to me is complete bullshit. It's a fucking cash grab. And I have to give credit where credit is due. Matt Hardy recorded a video on his YouTube channel. I implore you to find that video and seek it out. And, you know, it clearly is aimed at this and other lawsuits that have been recently filed against WWE. He defends WWE. He makes it very clear, especially if you are a young, aspiring wrestler or a kid who one day wants to become a wrestler. He makes it very clear, if you become a wrestler, you have an understanding. That understanding is that you will, guaranteed 100% no matter what, you will guaranteed suffer catastrophic physical damage that will haunt you later in life. Now, if you love wrestling, if you want to do it anyway and make a lot of money and become a big star, and you're willing to take those risks, then fine. Go for it. But you are guaranteed to suffer physical damage, long-term irreversible physical damage as a result of becoming a professional wrestler. And, you know, you can tell in the video how disgusted he is at these people who are just trying to, you know, make a buck off WWE. It's not their fault. You can't blame them. I am 100%... In Matt Hardy's court on this. I thought it was a great video. I thought he hit the nail right on the head. And he would know, as somebody who's worked for WWE, he's worked for TNA, he's worked for multiple promotions, he suffered a lot of injuries. And he even says that in the video. He himself has suffered a lot of injuries, especially when he came off the cage in that match against Edge all those years ago. He really fucked up his spine. So he would know. It's clearly an attempt to cash in on an unfortunate situation. I mean, I don't have any doubt in my mind that he was suffering from, I'm sure, a lot of different injuries. Now, half the injuries that are listed in the lawsuit could be bullshit for all I know, or they could be true, but that doesn't mean that WWE is responsible for it. And I love the line about how he was never properly educated as to the risks that he took medically. As though if you are going to become a professional wrestler, whether it's 1995 or 2015, how do you not know when you become a wrestler that you're going to get hurt? Is there anybody who can honestly prove to me, you know, with a straight face, that these guys, when they become a professional wrestler, no matter how long they've been doing it for, I don't care how many years back you go, that they don't know going into it that they're going to get hurt, that the risks are going to be there, that they could suffer some pretty serious injuries when they get into pro wrestling? Are you kidding me? Are we supposed to believe this? He was never properly educated. Now, it's true, we're always learning new things now about concussions and head trauma. Now the NFL, WWE, they're all trying to be more aggressive as far as recognizing them when they happen and treating them and keeping people out. So it's not like we're not learning new things. But you can't tell me 20 years ago that if you get hit in the head with a fucking chair that you don't know, that's probably bad for you. And I'm sure he took a lot of chair shots to the head. From the sounds of this lawsuit, it sounds like his wife may have taken a chair shot to the head or two in her day. Because to me, this whole thing just smells like bullshit. And I doubt very seriously that this will go anywhere. But, I mean, this is like the big veto thing. It's just so clearly a cash grab that, to me, it's almost insulting that now you've got to waste time in court. There are going to be lawyers that have to kind of, you know, tackle this case. It's such a fucking waste of time. It really is. The whole thing is just a fucking waste of time. Anyway, some rumored names for the WWE Hall of Fame, class of 2015. If you do not want to know names that may possibly be announced in the coming weeks for the Hall of Fame, this is a spoiler alert, so skip ahead a few minutes if you don't want to know. Per PW Insider, Kevin Nash will be part of this year's Hall of Fame class. He will be inducted most likely by Shawn Michaels. I don't know if he's going in as Diesel. I don't know if he's going in as Kevin Nash. They put Scott Hall in as Razor Ramon. And I assume when they did that at the time, I assumed it was because they wanted to save the Scott Hall induction as part of an eventual NWO induction. I would guess that Nash is going in as Kevin Nash. I mean, he was on television more recently than Scott Hall was, doing angles with CM Punk and Triple H, and he was, you know, recognized as Kevin Nash at that time. So I assume that's how he's going in. You know, it's not as though they can just ignore the stuff with Punk and Triple H a few years ago, even if the rest of us would love to try to forget that it ever happened. It's hard to argue that he doesn't deserve to go in. There is really no argument for it. He absolutely deserves to go into the Hall of Fame. I mean, look at, you know, some of the other people they've put in there. Even if you don't use that as an argument, oh, Coco Beware is in there, Nikolai Volkoff is in there. You know what? The guy, whether you like him or not, he was WWF champion for a year. He did carry the company. He didn't do a very good job of it. In fact, he did a horrible job of it. And the company's business was just in the shitter the entire time. But still, they put the belt on him for a year. He had a lot of success in WWE. He went over to WCW. Him and Hall were the catalyst for a lot of the changes that happened during the Monday Night Wars. And you could argue that it was a bad thing. They did more damage than anything else to the wrestling business. Some of that may be true, but he had an impact, right? You can't deny that Kevin Nash had an impact on wrestling, good, bad, or indifferent. And so that's the sort of thing, to me, that would earn him a Hall of Fame induction. Just like I think one day Eric Bischoff deserves to go into the Hall of Fame, and I'm sure, you know, Paul Heyman will go in and guys like that. These guys had a huge impact on the hottest period in wrestling history. You know, forget anything Kevin Nash did in TNA, because it's not like they're going to recognize that anyway. Forget the later run with Punk and Triple H and all that stuff. If you just take the early part of his career when he was the WWF champion and the stuff in the NWO, that alone earns him a spot in the Hall of Fame. So I have no problem with that. The other name floated for the Hall of Fame, and they're actually probably going to announce them on Raw this Monday night, because WWE is teasing that they're going to announce a tag team for the Hall of Fame. So we'll know very, very shortly if this is true. But the belief is that the tag team going into the Hall of Fame this year is the Bushwhackers. Yes, Luke and Butch, the Bushwhackers. Now, I know they had success as the Sheepherders before they ever came to WWE, and they were just vicious. They were vicious heels back in their day. The complete opposite of the kitty gimmick that they portrayed in WWE. If you only know the Bushwhackers from their WWE run, you need to find video of them as the Sheepherders back in the 80s. Okay, it'll blow your mind. I mean, the polar opposite of what they were in WWE. Even so, okay, even if you take their prior career into account where they had some success, you know, they've got other big-name teams that they can market for the Hall of Fame, and I don't understand why they don't do it. They have the Steiner brothers, who absolutely deserve to go in. They have Demolition. I can't understand why they're not in, you know, other than there was bad blood between Axe and Vince McMahon. If Vince McMahon can bury the hatchet with Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and all these other people, believe me, he can bury it with Axe. Demolition can go into the Hall of Fame. Put the Outlaws in. Put Road Dogg and Billy Gunn in, for Christ's sake. You know, you've already got them under contract. The Bushwhackers? You're going to put the Bushwhackers in the Hall of Fame? And you wonder why I say the things that I say about the WWE Hall of Fame. What a class this is shaping up to be. You have the Macho Man Randy Savage. You have Arnold Schwarzenegger, Rikishi's ass, Kevin Nash, and the Bushwhackers. What a motley crew. Raw this past Monday night was the go-home show to Fastlane, live from Orlando, Florida. You'll be happy to know that the DistractionRollup.com counter still stands at 7. There were no Distraction Roll-Up finishes on this show, so that's a step in the right direction. Raw was not a bad show this week. I thought the show-closing brawl with Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan was great. I thought it did more to make me want to see that match than anything else they've done since the Royal Rumble. I enjoyed the Triple H Ric Flair segment. Darren Young actually got some TV time for a change and has seemingly reformed the primetime players with Titus O'Neil. And Dean Ambrose and Luke Harper, I thought, had a damn good match. So that's enough for me to give it a thumbs up. On the other hand, our two main events were Kane versus Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan versus The Big Show. I swear, you would think that they were the only four fucking guys on the roster sometimes. We're less than 6 weeks away from WrestleMania as I record this. This is supposed to be the hottest period of television for them all year. And we've got Big Show and Kane in 90% of the main events. That is inexcusable. And it's got to stop. It has to stop. I would support a Big Show versus Kane match at WrestleMania only on one condition. Only if it is a quicksand match. So that way, they both sink to the bottom, never to be seen or heard from again. I'm channeling my inner Russo for this, okay? A quicksand match. Let's get that trending, okay? Book it. WrestleMania. Dusty Rhodes, Old Dust, was in the house to give his sons a pep talk before their match with the New Day. He was relegated to a backstage segment. They wouldn't even bring Dusty out to the ring like they did later in the show with Ric Flair. I just thought that was a complete waste of Dusty Rhodes. New Day won. When it was over, Stardust helped Gold Dust to his feet. Then he laid him out with the Crossroads. Backstage afterwards, Stardust told Old Dust that Cody Rhodes was dead, and so are you. Ooh. I still can't believe they're blowing their first match at Fastlane. I mean, you know, if Goldust really is retiring, they should have just built it up for Mania, but sound like a broken record on that. Roman Reigns beat Kane by countout with Daniel Bryan on commentary at ringside. Couldn't even pin Kane, and this guy wants to headline WrestleMania. Bryan made a very valid point on commentary. I thought Bryan was excellent, by the way, doing the commentary thing. Not everybody is good. I mean, you can be a good promo, but sometimes when you put a headset on and maybe you're not scripted or whatever, and if the announcers are busting your chops, guys, they're not so good on commentary. But I thought Bryan knocked it out of the park here. He was very good, and he made a good point. He said, you know, they stripped me of my championship last year because I couldn't defend it, yet I only had one less title defense than our current champion, Brock Lesnar, which is true. The idea here is that Bryan was trying to distract Roman by starting random yes chants during the match, trying to get in his head, so this would play into the main event later in the show. Ric Flair came out during Triple H's promo on Sting to tell him not to take Sting lightly as somebody who has had some experience wrestling Sting. They've had a match or two in their day, in case you didn't know. In fact, here's something you may not know. Ric Flair's last official match on record is against Sting in TNA. How sad is that? Both Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan, two of the biggest names of all time, had their last matches, maybe ever, inside a TNA ring. And both against Sting. Sting is the real legend killer here. Triple H shoved Ric Flair down on his ass in a fit of roid rage to end the segment. After his little Twitter controversy last week, Darren Young finally got some TV time. Got a jobber entrance, but TV time nonetheless. It was him and some scrub they never bothered to identify in the ring waiting for the Ascension. The Ascension came down. They started to maul Darren Young and the unnamed partner until Titus O'Neil made the sloppy save, coming to the aid of Darren Young and seemingly, apparently, possibly, reforming the primetime players. The good news here is that the primetime players are back together, and they may end up getting more TV time as a result. Maybe they'll get a push. It's a new team in the tag team division. The bad news is the primetime players are back together. And I say that because they just didn't have enough faith in either guy to push them as singles. And to be fair, Titus O'Neil was sloppy as shit here. I mean, forget the fact he botched his one spot at the Royal Rumble. I mean, because that may or may not have been his fault. But I thought he was sloppy as all hell. He was supposed to throw a kick or like a big boot that hit the guy in the midsection. He has not looked good lately. This save did not look good. But Darren Young, you know, Darren Young deserved a chance. Especially he changed his look. He came back. He was more serious. He was more intense. He had a more serious attitude. And then they just never gave him a chance. And so now he's back in a comedy tag team. And before long, I'm sure he'll be sticking the comb in his afro and doing the millions of dollars dance. And it'll be like nothing, you know, nothing ever changed. So that, I think, is kind of shameful. Bad news, Barrett beat Damian Mizdow with the bullhammer, pinning him off the distraction from Miz at ringside. It was a distraction, but no roll-up. So the counter remains at 7 for the year so far. After the match, Dean Ambrose zip-tied Wade Barrett to the ring post and forced him under duress to sign a contract for an Intercontinental title match at Fastlane. I would love to know in what court of law this contract signing would be upheld. And in the main event, Big Show beat Daniel Bryan by disqualification when Roman Reigns delivered a Superman punch to the Big Show. Reigns was out there to watch the match. Wisely, they did not put him on commentary like they did Daniel Bryan for the exact reasons you would think. Don't think for a second it was any reason other than we better not put this guy on commentary because we don't want him to make a fool of himself. So I thought that was actually a good move. It was better that way. It was much better. He distracted Bryan. He was signing autographs at ringside, posing for selfies with fans in the front row. After the match, they brawled until the referees broke them up. Then they shook hands. And then they got into it again. They brawled into the crowd. They brawled over by the announce desk until they finally were separated again. Somewhere in here, Roman Reigns had his mouth busted open. I liked it. It's been a while since we've seen a long brawl like that to end a show. And sometimes they'll have brawls that are just completely freaking lame. I didn't think this was lame at all. I thought it made both guys look strong, not just Roman. And it planted some doubt in your head, in your mind, about who was going to win at Fastlane. Even though I'm convinced that it's still Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, I don't think anything has really changed. But I thought this was good. So for a change, Raw went off the air. I was not shaking my head in disgust. I actually liked the finish of this show. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they got up their sleeve tonight. Like I said earlier, I think Daniel Bryan will go and help bring Roman Reigns to the best match that he's ever had. Because Bryan has that ability, right? There are some guys that have the ability to go in there with a guy who's maybe not as good as he is, who's green, or, you know, a bigger guy, whatever the case may be, and bring them to a great wrestling match. And Roman Reigns has had some really good matches, but he's never had that great singles match. That's the one thing that's been missing so far. Roman Reigns has never had a great singles match. He had a very good singles match with Randy Orton at SummerSlam, but he's never had that great match, and yet here this guy is going to the main event of WrestleMania, probably to win the championship. So I think it'll be nice for him to go in there, have this career-making performance if they have this blowaway match. And you know what? It may actually have the effect of you know, the fans having more respect for him. Maybe that's what part of the problem is here. You know, the fans have never really seen Roman Reigns, except when he was part of the Shield. I mean, as part of the Shield, he had some of the best matches in years in WWE. But as a single on his own, Roman Reigns has never had that one great match that the fans can really look at and go, okay, this guy has proven himself worthy, in their eyes, of being in a position to headline shows and be the champion and go out there and have great matches. And so I think if he has one at Fastlane, who knows? It may earn him some more respect and credibility from the fans, and you know, maybe they won't be as harsh towards him heading into WrestleMania. My favorite wrestling show, one that leaves you wanting more when it's over, not begging for less. Show open with William Regal in his office explaining that in NXT, the title can change hands by pinfall, submission, or by referee stoppage if a competitor is knocked out. Simple, to the point explanation of the takeover finish. Again, I knew a ref stoppage meant title change, but for the people who didn't, now they know too. He then announced Kevin Owens against Adrian Neville in a non-title match for the main event. Because Neville had not earned a title shot, that's why it's non-title, which is absolutely true. He lost to Finn Balor in the number one contenders tournament last week. And this right here, this whole segment is what I would throw in the face of all those who say Raw has to be 3 hours to fit everything in and still give us long wrestling matches. No, you can condense those 20 and 30 minute opening authority promos to 5 minutes or less, just like Regal did here. And to make it even better, Regal is a babyface general manager. We don't have this heel shit on NXT where Regal is trying to make everyone's life a living hell. He is exactly what a general manager should be. And wouldn't you know it, NXT is my favorite show all week. Easiest show to watch. It doesn't make the show any less interesting by not having a heel GM who constantly tries to screw over the babyface. It's such a tired formula that you see it over and over and over again. I mean, you made money off it in the late 90s because it was kind of a novel concept, and you had Vince McMahon. And to his credit, you will not find, I think, a better kind of heel villain, non-wrestler heel villain, than Vince McMahon. There's only one Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon in his prime as the Mr. McMahon character is just the best of all time. I mean, there was nobody better than Vince McMahon. So what they've tried to do in the last, you know, 10, 15 years since, constantly they've tried to recreate that with other people who were not nearly as good in the role, but we've already seen it, you know, hundreds of times on all wrestling shows. WWE is far from the only ones who are guilty of this. So it just, after a while, it loses its effect. I mean, how many times can you tell the babyface trying to fight back against the authority? I mean, it works every now and then. But you know what? You watch Regal on NXT, and that works just as well. I love William Regal in this role on NXT. I'm kind of sad he's not on commentary anymore. But now they've got their team now with Corey Graves and Jason Albert. And, you know, Rich is the, what's his last name? I already forgot his last name. Rich, whatever. Rich. My boy Rich. He's the play-by-play guy on NXT. He's actually pretty good. And so they're kind of building that team up, and that's fine. I think Regal in this role is awesome. I think anybody who tries to argue otherwise that what I just said is incorrect and that you need a heel authority figure and you need this and you need that, you know, you need 3 hours. Only, you know, how are you going to fit everything in without 3 hours? Anybody who tries to argue that, William Regal says, your argument is invalid. Speaking of our new NXT champion, Kevin Owens, he was out next for a promo to a mix of cheers and boos. He said he was done with Sami Zayn. He said Finn Balor was next. Anywhere, anytime he wanted his shot. And that really was it. Pretty straightforward stuff. Next up, we had the surprise return of the man-beast, Rhino. And for a second, I thought I had mistakenly put on Impact. Same week that we had Tommy Dreamer back on Impact, no less. We have Rhino on NXT. But he did come out to a tremendous ovation, the Full Sail crowd. Nobody was expecting him. I think that really is why he got that kind of reaction, as big as it was. I mean, come on, nobody would have expected that Rhino was going to come out. He used to be a big name, kind of, sort of. So they went nuts for him. He made short work of Elias Sampson, gored him into oblivion for the win. Lots of holy shit chants when Rhino first came out, including there was one dad in the front row who covered his kid's ears as he himself chanted holy shit. I thought that was great. Loud ECW chants when the match was over. You know, I said it when TNA started trotting out the old ECW guys all those months ago when they came to New York City. And I'll say it again now. I could do without seeing the older ECW guys again in 2015. But, to his credit, Rhino is in much better shape overall, much better shape than a lot of those old ECW guys are today. And he did get the monster reaction when he came out. If the idea is to keep him around for a few weeks and have him put over, say, Finn Balor, whose promo he interrupted backstage when the match was over, he didn't say anything. He kind of walked by into the camera shot, but clearly they were setting something up with Rhino and Balor, I would think. Then I'm okay with that. Rhino turning on Tommy Dreamer on Impact and having matches with Tommy Dreamer, that did not serve any real purpose at all. That's what I had a problem with. That was my biggest issue with that. Raw is 3 hours, okay? Impact is 2 hours. NXT is 1 hour. Not even a full 60 minutes most weeks. 55 minutes, 52 minutes. Okay, it's not even a full hour. And the last thing I want to see is them trotting out the old guys, trying to, you know, as the announcer said, trying to revive their careers. NXT is the place where guys go to revive their careers. Not when you only have an hour to work with each week. And moving NXT to 2 hours is not the answer. So it was cool to see Rhino get the big pop, let him have one or two matches to put over the younger guys, and let's move on. Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy beat the Vaudevillains. After the match, Blake and Murphy popped up on the Titantron. They mocked them. They told Carmella that she should be with them. She pretended to dry heave in response. So they're setting up Kaz and Enzo as the next challengers for the tag team titles. It's about damn time. I mean, we go through stretches where they're not even on TV for weeks. And usually when they're on TV, they lose. You know, Enzo is booked like a goof. He gets pinned and they lose. You know, even when Colin Cassidy was doing the singles run for a while, Enzo was out with a broken leg. If you remember, most weeks, Colin Cassidy lost almost every match he was in. I can never understand why. I mean, other than the fact he's not ready. Especially then, he wasn't ready. He was still learning and getting better. You know, but he's a big guy. The fans were behind him, and he would just lose every single week. So finally, it looks like they're actually building these guys up as winners who are going to challenge for the tag team titles. CJ Parker stormed down to the ring. He threatened to hijack the show. He said he hates the fans and he hates NXT. Them are fighting words. That's when we started to see more of that static and interference that we've been seeing on NXT television for a few weeks now. Parker busted out caution tape. He started taping up the ring from one end to the other so nobody could wrestle in it until Solomon Crow made his long-anticipated NXT debut and attacked Parker from behind. And when I say long, I mean long. I mean, this guy first debuted under the Crow name in August of 2013. That was the same month that The Authority was born, and Daniel Bryan beat John Cena. That's a long time ago. So after laying out Parker, he got on the mic. He said, "We now return you to your regularly scheduled program." And he dropped the mic and he left through the crowd. A babyface debut for a guy who I thought for sure would debut as a heel, and probably is better off as a heel. And I've got to say, you know, I was left a little disappointed. After all those vignettes, this is how the guy debuts. I guess I was expecting more, you know. And after the hacking stuff, maybe that's why. I don't know. It looks like the hacking stuff was just a red herring, I guess. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how, if at all, the hacking stuff plays into his character in the weeks to come, if it does at all. I thought this was okay, but I was expecting more than just okay. I didn't expect that after all this time, Solomon Crowe would debut and he would beat up CJ Parker, you know, in the middle of the show. I guess I was just expecting more out of it. If he was going to debut as a babyface, they could have taken the idea that some of you guys pitched on Facebook and had him start hacking into Tyler Breeze's cell phone as he came to the ring. And Tyler Breeze wouldn't know what's going on, who's doing this. And then eventually he would come out and attack him, and you can start a program with him and Breeze. But anyway, it's nice to have some more new blood on the show. That's always a plus. Blue Pants now has a Titantron and music. Even if the Titantron is just the outline of actual Blue Pants and her music is just Colin Cassidy's rendition of The Price is Right. If you remember one of the times that Blue Pants came out, Colin Cassidy got on the mic and he hummed the theme of The Price is Right as she came down. They basically just took that recording and made that her theme song. Full Sail loves this woman. They love them some Blue Pants. It'll be great the day that she turns heel and comes out wearing red pants. By the way, I read that Blue Pants, who does have an actual name, believe it or not, even if they never use it on TV, Leva Bates, I read that she was also on Raw this week, apparently, as one of the Rosebuds. She was a Rosebud that Paige had kidnapped when she stole her clothes. So she had a match here with Sasha Banks, the new NXT Women's Champion, got more offense in, I think, than she has probably in all of her other matches on NXT combined. Banks then murdered the poor girl with those elevator knees in the corner. That's my name for them, by the way. I have no idea what they're called. That move may have an actual name, but I'll be, you know, damned if I know what the hell it is. It looks like an elevator going down when she does it, so I call them elevator knees. Then the backcracker into the crossface, the Banks statement, as she calls it, for the tap out and the win. I love the way that she cranks back on it. It just makes the hold look so devastating. So I like this. Good showcase for the champion. We then got a medical update on the condition of Sami Zayn from Dr. Chris Amon. Same Chris Amon who is taking CM Punk and Colt Cabana to court. And it just so happens that we see him on television here talking about the great care that he's given to Sami Zayn and the great measures they took to ensure that this man, this injured man, was well taken care of. What great timing. What coincidental timing for this segment here on this show. Main event was Kevin Owens and Adrian Neville, non-title. All I can say about this is just, wow. This was incredible. Now, I will say, you know, it was moving a little slow for my liking early on. I was kind of like, all right, you know, I'm just waiting for it to pick up a little bit. Once it picked up, it was just an incredible match. In fact, I would say that even though it's a bit unfair to compare, because, you know, Owens and Zayn at TakeOver, that match, it was meant to tell a story. They were holding back from having an all-time classic because it's the first of many matches they're going to have. As much as I enjoyed that match, this match blew that one out of the water. This is up there with the triple threat match at the Royal Rumble and Balor versus Neville as my match of the year so far in WWE. Two matches involving Adrian Neville. How is that possible, right? I mean, he has such big ears. Surely we need to gimmick this man up. Now, see, this was proof that sometimes when you have a special performer who can do things that not many other people can do, sometimes that's all you need to get yourself over. If they just give him that chance, no gimmicks, no masks, no funny dances, this man will get over on the main roster. He's too talented not to. He was the star of this match, which is taking nothing away from Kevin Owens. In a way, this match reminded me of an old Ric Flair title defense from the late 80s. You know, you have the heel champion. He gives most of the match to the babyface. Some great near falls. Really makes his opponent look like $1 million. But in the end, he ekes out the win. and you hate him for it. I mean, this wasn't a title match, but that's kind of what it reminded me of. Neville hit a 450 splash off the apron onto Owens at one point that earned him a holy shit chance, and rightfully so. Then came, I gotta say, this is maybe one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. He very slowly lifted Owens off his feet for a deadlift German suplex. Now, I know Kevin Owens has lost quite a bit of weight, but Kevin Owens is not the smallest man on the NXT roster. And nor is Neville the biggest. You know, in a lot of ways, you got that dynamic going where Neville is, he's jacked, he's ripped, he's you know, he's got a lot of muscle, clearly, a lot of strength, but he's a small guy. Kevin Owens, he may not be very tall, but, you know, he's definitely got a size advantage over Adrian Neville. This is not an even Steven, you know, tail of the tape kind of thing. And to see Neville just deadlift this guy for a German as slowly as he did, and then perfect bridge for the near fall. I mean, this was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. And it takes a lot these days, you know, with all the flips and dives and, you know, just watch any episode of Lucha Underground, for crying out loud. I mean, it takes a lot, given what we see on TV, to impress me and make me go, wow. That made me go, wow. That was awesome. And then Neville nearly kills Owens with a reverse Rana, spiked him right down on the back of his neck. At first, I thought it was on the top of his head. But then I went back and watched it. He landed on the back of his neck, kind of the upper part of his shoulders. But my God, I let out an audible shriek when he nailed that Rana. Owens kicked out of everything, but barely. Neville took him closer to the limit than anybody has thus far on NXT. And then he got caught. And Owens propelled him into the air, destroyed him with a powerbomb on the way down for the pin. This was an awesome match. I've already gone back and watched it again. And now we've got Balor and Owens to look forward to in the next few weeks, I would guess. So all I can say is I love this show. Puts a smile on my face every single week. ProWrestlingTees.com is your one-stop shop for all things Sound Off. We've got a ton of different t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, the Eat Sleep Sound Off repeat shirt, and original designs as well, like Let Me School You, Son, and It's Not Rocket Science, People. And it's not rocket science that you should go right now to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off, and get yourself a shirt, maybe two. They ship all over the world, so if you are an international fan of the show, fear not, you can get your own Sound Off shirt. You can also pay via credit card or PayPal, whatever works best for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. Buy yourself a Sound Off shirt, and the next time you go to Monday Night Raw, TNA, Ring of Honor, or just out with the family, you can represent the Sound Off with an official Sound Off t-shirt. Again, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off and get your shirt right now. On Tuesday, Samoa Joe stunned the wrestling world when he tweeted this out. He said, "I have decided to part ways with Impact Wrestling, my very best to them moving forward, and my eternal thanks to the fans." What was stunning about it was that it took him this long to do it. What was not so stunning, for anybody who followed along during the AJ Styles stuff, is that TNA would let one of its biggest names, one of, you know, its TNA originals, let him go without putting up much of a fight, seemingly. As is usually the case with TNA, it just boils down to money. You know, money they either don't have or they're just not willing to spend to keep its stars. You know, they re-signed Kurt Angle, but that was only after WWE made it clear they didn't want him back. So where else was Angle going to go? So ends a 10-year run. 10 years he spent in that company. Can you believe that? He spent a decade in TNA. I still remember when Samoa Joe was actually a hot commodity once upon a time. He hasn't been a hot commodity in many years. Joe went to TNA. He was a world champion. Only once, if you can believe that. Once in 10 years, he held the TNA world title. In today's day and age, where people hold titles, I mean, 2, 3, 4, 10 times, 15 times, he held that TNA title once in the 10 years that he was there. But Joe was never as big of a star as the other top guys that came out of ROH, like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. You know, that was his choice. He made that choice. And in fairness, a guy with the physique like Joe's at that time probably was not going to get a look from WWE anyway. You know, these days I think they'd be more open to somebody like him. I mean, Bull Dempsey, anyone? Hello? I still can't believe that he's under WWE contract at all. Kevin Owens? Okay, nobody is going to mistake Kevin Owens for Roman Reigns. But the guy is super talented, and he's killing it right now in NXT. So I think they seem anyway to be more open-minded, even if you don't have a Herculean physique. He was part of what a lot of people think is the greatest match in TNA history in 2005, that triple threat with AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels for the X Division title. He helped put the X Division in that company on the map. And then he had the feud with Kurt Angle a few years later, where Angle, I believe Angle was the first man to beat Joe. Joe had been undefeated for months and months and months, and Kurt beat him. Joe did end up beating Kurt Angle later on for the championship in a cage match that did the biggest pay-per-view buy rate of any pay-per-view that TNA has ever done, ever. They did something like 55,000 buys for that show. It was the peak of TNA. I remember when they promoted that match, like it promoted it like you would promote an MMA fight. Just, you know, a dead serious build, two tough guys fighting for the championship. I can't think of a more basic story than that. And they did their biggest business ever on pay-per-view, and so naturally they started booking other pay-per-view main events the same way, right? Of course not. Of course not. They never did it again. That's TNA in a nutshell right there. Always striving to be an alternative to WWE, and when they finally find a formula that seems to work, ew, success, ew, what's that? Ew, cooties, go away, ew. That's TNA. Aside from that, I would sum up Joe's run in TNA in one word: disappointing. This guy should be pulling, you know, a ton of money right now working with Bryan and Rollins and Ambrose and those guys, or working matches with Tanahashi and Okada and Ishii over in Japan, not running around with a tattoo on his face and a giant machete or playing second fiddle to MVP. You know, I mean, yeah, remember when he was kidnapped in that van? I mean, I know it was one angle, it was so long ago, but I can't get over that. He got kidnapped, you know, a bunch of guys jumped out of a van and kidnapped him. What a payoff to that storyline, huh? Or that one year where he lost every single one of his matches in the Bound for Glory series. They had Samoa Joe go on a losing streak. Because we all know how well those losing streak angles usually turn out for people. But, you know, on the kidnapping stuff, I can't get over that. On the kidnapping stuff, take a guess who the head writer was at the time of that winner of a storyline. I remember Joe's rant on Russo. It was only a year ago. I think it was like last January. Samoa Joe went on a whole rant on Vince Russo, where he finally came clean about that whole disaster. He said they took him off TV for a while, right, to sell the kidnapping. And he would be calling him up like, all right, guys, you know, what do you have for me? Like, how am I coming back? What's the plan here? What's the idea? And Russo would never have an answer for him. He's like, yeah, we'll figure it out when you come back. And Joe had one of the all-time great quotes when he was doing this interview. He said, he's like, this is a reference to Russo. He goes, this guy couldn't write his way out of a kidnapping. That's what Joe said. So it's not surprising that this guy's character was fucked, in part by the creative vision, or lack thereof, of one Vince Russo. I'm sure that was somebody else's fault, though, as it always is with Russo. But, you know, TNA, I think when we really look back at this and Joe's career in TNA, as big of a star there to them as he was, I think one of TNA's great fuck-ups, whenever we kind of write the eulogy for TNA, whenever that may be, if you had to make a list of all the fuck-ups, first of all, it would be a list about as long as the one that Chris Jericho had on that one Nitro when he was going through his list of 1,004 holes. You know, armbar! he had a list that was like out the ring. We can make a whole list like that of TNA fuck-ups from over the years, but I think in the top tier of that list, I can't say number one, but I could say that probably in the top three, top five, somewhere high up there of TNA fuck-ups, way up on that list would be their booking of Samoa Joe. You know, and when he came in, he was hot. I mean, people don't remember, in some cases, I think, how hot this guy was when he first came in. He left ROH, he went to TNA. And I know you don't have to be a Samoa Joe fan, and you could think he's overrated and everything else. Maybe so, but you know what? He was over as all hell when he first came in, and whether he's overrated or not, if the guy is over with the crowd, you play off that, right? You play your hot hand, and TNA did for a little while, and then they cooled him off to such a degree where he just didn't really mean anything anymore. He just became a joke. Like I said, the Van storyline, putting him on losing streaks, putting him in mid-card matches. You book a guy in the mid-card long enough, people are going to look at him as a mid-card guy. When you have a guy like Samoa Joe who comes to your company and is that hot, and you're doing 60,000 buys on a pay-per-view for the guy's championship win, you know, you better fucking make the most of it. And TNA just completely bungled it. Who's to say? Who's to say, had they played their cards right with Joe, that he would have become a big enough star to lead TNA to a level higher than where they are now? It wasn't like he was going to lead them to the promised land and competing with WWE or anything like that. We have seen time and time again, no matter how big of a name you are, that TNA has brought in over the years, it never made a lick of difference. They brought in Hogan, Flair, Foley, Sting, Booker, Nash, Steiner. Everybody you can think of has at one time or another been a part of TNA, and it didn't mean a damn thing. Kurt Angle came in, it meant something for a little bit, and then he was just another guy. So I'm not naive enough to think that Samoa Joe on his own would have led them to, you know, topple Vince McMahon. You don't have to topple Vince McMahon, you know, or do bigger ratings than Raw to be a success. And they had something in Joe, and they squandered it. And I think that will go down as one of the biggest failures in the history of that company. And the saddest part is, you know, Joe got more publicity and is more of a name now in the last week since this news broke for announcing that he's leaving TNA than he was for pretty much 95% of his actual run in TNA. Now, he's gotten heavier. The dude's put on some weight in recent years. But you know what? I think a refocused, rededicated Samoa Joe who's extra motivated to go out there and have kick-ass matches, maybe in Ring of Honor, maybe he goes to Japan. That could be a lot of fun. That's what I think ends up happening here. People have been asking me, do you think he's going to NXT? Is he going to WWE? I can't say no. I can't say no, and I'll tell you why in a second, but I see Samoa Joe ending up in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think that probably is one of several destinations for him. I think it'll be very much like an AJ Styles type situation. He's already been sending tweets over, these tweets to Carl Anderson, who's part of the Bullet Club over in New Japan, saying, "Hi, Carl Anderson." So I don't know if that's a sign of something or if he's just trolling the fans, but I think Joe ends up in New Japan. I think it would be a good fit for him. I think it would be a great fit for Cesaro, too, if he ever gets out of his contract in WWE. I mean, if he's happy in WWE and making good money, then, hey, you know, all the more power to him. But guys like that, I think, would fit like a glove if they went over to New Japan. And it's not like New Japan couldn't use some new faces right now to mix it up with their main event guys. But, you know, on the WWE thing, I posted this tweet because I didn't see anybody else reference this at the time. But I said, you know, remember when Triple H briefly followed Samoa Joe on Twitter last summer and Joe followed him back? And I think Triple H quickly unfollowed him like 10 minutes later. But there was a, you know, that created a whole big to-do. Oh, what does this mean? Is Joe coming over to WWE? Oh, my God. You know, and it makes you wonder. I mean, I figured it was probably to get Joe's number. Because when you follow him and he follows back, they could direct message. So I'm sure there were some DMs on Twitter going back and forth between these two guys. Maybe they exchanged contact information. There's always been stories that Triple H had an interest. Mick Foley, I think, told the story on Facebook of bumping into Triple H and Stephanie at the airport back in like 04. And he may have still been in Ring of Honor at that point, because I don't think he came to TNA until the following year. But Foley had done some shots in Ring of Honor. And he saw Triple H and Stephanie, and I think Foley may have been on his way to a Ring of Honor show when they asked him, you know, where are you headed? And Foley says that Triple H made a comment like, I've heard great things about this Samoa Joe guy. So Samoa Joe was on Triple H's brain even back then, you know, whoever recommended him, maybe Regal, I don't know. And then that thing happens on Twitter last year. Now you see Triple H is bringing in all these indie darlings in to create this this great, you know, group of guys, almost like this new clique that he's got building up there in NXT. Joe is older. He's heavier. All of that is true. But, you know, I can't sit here and tell you that there's no chance of Samoa Joe going to NXT. If Triple H has an interest in Samoa Joe, there's absolutely a chance that he could end up in NXT. Absolutely. I would not rule that out at all. But do I think it's likely to happen? No. No, I don't think. I think the chances are very slim, especially if they express no interest in AJ Styles. You know, AJ Styles actually said in interviews that he would be willing, if they wanted him to, you know, he would put his ego aside, he'd be willing to go to NXT at first if they wanted him to, if they asked him, and they still didn't want him. If they didn't want AJ Styles, I don't know that they're going to want Samoa Joe. It could be the stink of TNA. How many big TNA stars have made the jump from TNA to WWE? I mean, like, homegrown TNA talent. How many have gone to WWE? I can't think of any in the last 5 years. Can you name me one? Has a Christopher Daniels gone to WWE? Has Bobby Roode or Austin Aries gone to WWE? No. So there may be something there where, you know, this guy's got the stain of TNA on him now after all these years. Plus, he's 30-something years old. Plus, he's heavy as hell. I don't see him ending up in NXT. I wouldn't close the door on it. I still think he ends up in New Japan. And I think that's probably where the Dudley boys end up too, by the way. I mean, soon you're going to have the old TNA roster now on the New Japan roster before long. I think all those guys end up in New Japan before long. Impact this week. Impact was a good show from Glasgow. They're still on their European tour. All those tape shows are still airing. I thought the Grado Al Snow stuff and the Drew Galloway debut were the best things on the entire show. So let's just get into it here. Kurt Angle opened the show, telling us that he came back for one reason. That was to win the TNA World Heavyweight title. And he would be entering tonight's 20-man gauntlet match at number 20, since he was the number one contender. Was that even announced, that Kurt Angle was the number one contender? Maybe it was, and I missed it. I don't remember that. I could have sworn Bobby Roode and Austin Aries had a match a week or two ago to determine the number one contender, but maybe that wasn't official. Roode was not on the show anyway. He was selling his beating at the hands of Eric Young. The Wolves and Matt Hardy beat James Storm, Abyss, and Manic. After the match, the heels laid out the babyfaces, and Abyss laid out Manic with the Black Hole Slam, I guess as a punishment for losing the match. Next segment saw Mr. Anderson trying to shave EC3's head, but Tyrus saved him and allowed him to escape. Unfortunately for poor Tyrus, he wasn't so lucky. He got laid out with a mic check, duct tape to the ropes, while Rockstar Spud shaved off whatever little bit of hair he had left on his head. Spud then got on the mic and threatened to make EC3 the first customer in the Rockstar Spud barbershop. They showed Mickie James arriving outside the building. This was her big return to TNA television, and she said that she had some things to get off her chest. For those who don't know, she is engaged to Magnus. They just had a kid, so they're using her as part of his storyline with Bram. She is not back under contract with TNA. Grado beat Al Snow with his wee boot, which is a running boot to the face. Now, last week I said that I had no idea what a Grado even was, and you guys sent me clips of his entrances and some of his matches, and then I watched this, and the guys won me over. He's a lot of fun to watch. This was fun. First of all, Al Snow is... What is Al Snow? What, 50 years old now? This fucker is in the best shape that I've ever seen him in. I mean, he looked big when I met him in New Orleans last year, but with the shirt off, I mean, he actually looked buff. It's the first time I can ever remember Al Snow being buff. He should send Vince McMahon a tape. He'll put him in the Hall of Fame next year. Now, Grado comes out when he makes his entrances on the independent shows and everything else that he does. He comes out to Madonna's Like a Prayer, but he was not allowed to use it on this show. Or he did, but they had to dub it over for the TV version. You know, he had started a whole big social media campaign this week trying to get Madonna's attention to get her permission to use it, but no dice. So instead, TNA used a knockoff instrumental version of Like a Prayer. And not for nothing, I thought it was pretty good. I liked it. I actually liked this version of it. People were going nuts when this guy came out. He is a dead ringer for a British version of Patton Oswalt. I was thinking in my head, he reminds me of somebody. Who the hell does this guy remind me of? And it's Patton Oswalt, if he had a Scottish accent. So Al Snow kicked his ass most of the way. Then he pointed, his mom and dad were at ringside, he pointed at them. He gave Grado the snowplow for a near fall. Josh Matthews and Taz totally botched the call. You know, they talked over the whole thing. Not one time did they mention that Al Snow just hit his finish on the guy, and the guy kicked out of it. That should have been a big deal, and they dropped the ball. So that kind of bothered me. Al Snow hit a very impressive-looking moonsault, but Grado kicked out again. Snow went up for another one. This time he missed. Grado hit a running cannonball in the corner. He landed the wee boot for the pin. Afterward, Al Snow raised Grado's arm out of respect, which was a nice way to put him over in his hometown, until the Beatdown Clan came and killed both of them. And as they're beating these guys down, out from the crowd comes Drew Galloway, the former Drew McIntyre, with a lead pipe for the save. Massive reaction for this. Low-key somehow got a deep gash behind his ear. Deep enough that you could stick a quarter in there and make a collect call. I mean, it was disgusting. He was bleeding all over his neck, bleeding all over his chest. This was a really hot angle. It was something I figured they would end the show with. I was kind of surprised they didn't. But, you know, I guess given the Battle Royal and what was on the line, it made sense for them to have the MVP and the Lashley stuff at the end. But this was hot. This was really, I enjoyed this a lot. This is the best part of the entire show. Taryn Terrell pinned Angelina Love with the Taryn Cutter, as the announcers called it. What an original name, too. Lights went out after the match. When they came back on, Awesome Kong was in the ring. They exchanged blows, Kong later out with the Implant Buster. That's when Gail Kim ran down, had a stare down with Kong before Kong bailed. If they're reprising the Kong-Kim feud, that's a great move on their part, because those two women are single-handedly responsible for putting that Knockouts division on the map. Unfortunately, the announcers did nothing to make it feel like a big deal, only briefly, very briefly, they alluded to the fact that these two had a history. They have more than just a history. They had one of the best feuds in the history of that promotion. You would think they would make a bigger deal out of it. Not a great night for the announcing. Eric Young pinned Tommy Dreamer with the pile driver in a street fight. Dreamer bled all over the place. Mickey James was in the ring, cutting a promo on Bram. She talked about how with the nerve damage that Magnus suffered when Bram attacked him, he doesn't even have the strength to hold up his infant son. She called Bram a bitch, slapped him. He cornered her, but referees came out before he could do something heinous. I thought Mickey was actually really good here. MVP in the main event won a 20-man gauntlet match with Royal Rumble rules. So two guys start. Every 60 seconds thereafter, another man comes down. Elimination occurs when you throw your opponent over the top rope until only two men are left. And at that point, pinfalls and submissions count. The match went about half an hour. It was pretty long. Austin Aries and Kenny King started. They lasted damn near to the end of the match, but got dumped out. Kurt Angle was number 20. He was alone with the Beatdown Clan. He did manage to eliminate three of them, Joe, Low-Key, and Kenny King. Came down to Kurt Angle and MVP. Kenny King grabbed Angle's leg and distracted him, which allowed MVP to nail the blackout kick. Angle went flying out over the top rope. And so MVP wins the match. He is now going to challenge Lashley this Friday on Impact for the TNA World Heavyweight title. I thought the main event was good. The Grado stuff with Al Snow was a lot of fun. And the Mickey James angle was strong as well. Plus, he had Kong and Kim. They're teasing that. So I think this was a very enjoyable episode of Impact. Lucha Underground. Very heavy female influence this week on Lucha Underground. That's what I got out of this show. We had Mil Muertes beating Chavo Guerrero by DQ after hitting him from behind with a chair. This match sucked. The chair shot had no effect other than to piss off Mil Muertes, who then killed Chavo with a flatliner onto the chair. Got a big pop from me. Chavo is just a completely useless character on the show. Katrina did not come out with Mil Muertes, but she did wander down midway through the match, and when it was over, he pointed at her. He wanted her to get in the ring, give Chavo the lick of death. When she refused, he grabbed her by the throat, threatened to give her a flatliner, but Phoenix ran down to make the save, and she French kissed him, and they left together. I predict doom for young Phoenix. If bad things supposedly happen when this woman licks you, I would be terrified of what might happen when she swallows your tongue. Oddly enough, I'd love to one day find out. In Dario Cueto's office, we see him talking to the crew, thanking them for what they did to Big Rick all those weeks ago, and as their reward, he is putting them in the main event tonight against Sexy Star, Masquerita Sagrada, and Pimpinella Escarlata. Their only job is to hurt them so bad they never return to the temple. Back in the ring, we find Son of Havoc with the baddest bitch in the building, as she calls herself, Ivelisse, who says that since her man does nothing but lose week after week, she'll do his fighting for him. And her opponent is Angelico, who, for some reason this week, looking at his face, maybe I'm the only one, he reminded me an awful lot of Dean Ambrose. I don't know why. I mean, was I the only one? Maybe I was. So they had an intergender match that was mostly Angelico refusing to strike Ivelisse and ducking some of her offense, and then she would connect with something, a kick or whatever, and he would retaliate, but only in self-defense. He didn't want to hurt her. He landed a huge flapjack on her. Son of Havoc ended up giving him a hangman throat first over the top rope, which sent him stumbling backwards, tripping over Ivelisse, who was on all fours. Oh my. And she got the pin. After the match, Angelico grabbed the mic, and as soon as he started speaking, I was reminded of Justin Gabriel. I remembered that this guy is also from South Africa. He said he would love to go one-on-one with her again, which caused Son of Havoc to freak out at ringside. This was the first time we were really able to see some real personality from Angelico, and I liked what I saw. I mean, I like to see more of the guy. Otherwise, the match, you know, it was what it was. Tejano, who debuted last week attacking Alberto El Patron to end the show, did a sit-down interview, pre-recorded, with Vampiro. The interview was in Spanish. At least we had subtitles. He vowed to get his AAA title back from Alberto. Then he wrestled Superfly, not the one that murdered his girlfriend, the other Superfly. Tejano won with a Death Valley driver into a neckbreaker. Del Rio ran down after the match and kicked his ass. He whipped him with Tejano's own bull rope. He brings a bull rope to the ring, in case you didn't know. So Tejano managed to escape. Good intensity here from Alberto. I've liked what I've seen from him so far. There's no clear-cut main event storyline right now in this promotion. You know, Prince Puma is the champion, but we haven't seen him since Cage destroyed him. And he has no belt, since Cage destroyed that too. So for now, we've got Alberto with the AAA title feuding with Tejano, but we've also got Cage still roaming around, and Big Rick is back. You know, we'll get to him in a second. So everybody is getting time to shine here on this show. It's not just about the guy in Lucha Underground. There is no one guy. It's a cast of characters. I like that. Back in Cueto's office, Cage demands to be recognized as the champion. Cueto says he would love to have Cage as his champion, but he just lost. He lost to Puma, which is true. He went and got himself DQ'd. So he says next week he will meet Puma in a non-title match. If he wins there, then he will earn himself a title shot. See, he's a heel authority figure, but at least he's fair. So as Cage walks out, Chavo walks in, and he quits. He says he's going home to his family. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out, I say. He will not be missed. We then cut to a segment where Black Lotus, Angela Fong, finds the caged monster that Dario Cueto has been seen visiting. He's been hiding him, I guess, under the temple. We don't see the monster, but I assume this is the Matanza that she's been looking for. She says that she's been waiting to kill him with her bare hands. Wow. These women don't mess around. Imagine a battle between the women of NXT and the women of Lucha Underground. You know, you take Charlotte, Sasha, Becky, and Bayley, and put them up against Black Lotus, Sexy Star, Ivelisse, and Katrina. That's a match I'd like to see. Main event was The Crew against Sexy Star, Masquerita Sagrada, and Pimpinella Escarlata. They immediately choked out Pimpy, who had been, I love saying that, Pimpy. What a name. What a nickname for somebody, huh? Hey, Pimpy. Anyway, he had to be helped to the back. The little guy got some offense in, but then he got a Kevin Owens-style powerbomb on the apron and a curb stomp on a steel chair in the ring, and that was the end of him. Sexy Star was left all by herself with all three men. She tried. She got some offense in, some head scissor takedowns. Looked like she even got her mouth bloodied up, but the odds were too much. They all started ganging up on her, stomping the shit out of her. When they spotted Big Rick on his way down, eye patch and all, from when they put out a lit cigar in his eye. This was enough to distract Mr. Cisco, who was rolled up for the pin. Oh my God. They're infecting other shows now with these distraction roll-ups. Rick got in the ring, the crew bailed. No big cliffhanger this week. Had some good action. Solid show. Not the best episode I've seen, but they can't all be winners. Let's get to the mailbag here. We are going to open with an audio question, but before we do, you can email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. This audio question comes to us from Brad Gilmore.
Hey, Solemonster. My question for you this week is this. Say, by some stretch of the imagination, TNA Impact Wrestling goes out of business. Does WWE have any interest in buying their video library for the network?
Yeah, I think they would have an interest in buying it, because I think that's part of their plan to try to own all of the libraries that are out there. I think they would be fools if they didn't at least make an attempt to buy the library. Now, you're asking, do I think they would have interest in it for the WWE network? That I'm not so sure of. I think if they bought the TNA library, it wouldn't be a case where within a couple of months it's going to pop up on the network. I think it would be a long time before it pops up on the network. There's a lot of other stuff they have to push out onto that network long before they ever put TNA on there. you know, for them to rush TNA footage onto the network would imply that TNA would be a draw for the network. I don't buy that for a second. I don't think TNA would be a draw for the network at all, especially if it's just old footage. But do they want it? Would they want the footage in their library under their ownership? Absolutely. I mean, they want, you know, the Mid-South library as well. I'm sure if they could have their hands on every library that was out there, they would want it. I think the TNA one would be no different, but I don't think they would want it for the network. I think they would want it just to have it. Trey from Pell City just listened to his first show last week. I was wondering your thoughts on The Undertaker possibly wrestling Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 31. Personally, I'm excited about the possibility of this dream match, but concerned about Taker's health. Also, storyline-wise, what is the point? The streak has been broken, so why would you want to face a 50-plus-year-old man in a match at WrestleMania that you have to carry? Well, that'd be the issue with the Sting match, too, right? Putting two 50-plus-year-old guys in there together, it's a risk. But it's a bigger dream match that Taker and Wyatt would not be. You know, I'll tell you that. I don't look at Undertaker and Bray Wyatt, as you called it, as a dream match. I mean, I don't know where you're coming from with that. Let's see how the storyline progresses, but I'm not at all interested in seeing Undertaker and Bray Wyatt at this point. And for all the people to put in there with Undertaker at this stage of the game, I don't know that Wyatt is the right guy. I also don't see Undertaker losing 2 years in a row, which means Wyatt loses much the same way he did last year to John Cena. It's a big match for him, absolutely, but if he loses, where does he go from there? If Undertaker loses, you know, I guess if Undertaker loses, let's think about this. If Undertaker loses, I guess if they do still want to do Undertaker and Sting next year in Dallas, and you want to put Bray Wyatt over this year, you could do a story where, you know, after going 21-1, all of a sudden, Undertaker has now lost 2 years in a row. He doesn't have it anymore. He's lost it. He's lost his touch. He's over the hill. He's doubting himself. But Sting ends up talking him into a match next year that we know is going to be the final match for both guys. They make that very clear in advance. This is it. And it's a story of redemption, you know? I mean, does Taker go out a loser, or does he go out a winner? Because he's beating Sting, guaranteed. If they have a match, Undertaker is winning that match. No doubt about it. 110% he wins that match. So I guess you could spin an Undertaker loss this year that way if you wanted to. I wouldn't do it, but you could spin it that way. Daniel from London. I recently got the network and started watching late 80s, early 90s pay-per-views, mainly to catch old favorites like the Steiners, Vader, and LOD. What really struck me was the difference in camera direction. Back then, a camera, no matter which angle, would stay fixed on a wrestler as a move was set up and executed, only cutting to another camera once the move was finished and sold. These days, the cameras always seem to switch or cut as the move is being executed, right as the victim hits the mat. To me, this new way of shooting really takes away from the impact and sometimes even takes you out of the moment. Have you noticed this? Oh, I've noticed it. And you are 100% on the money. It's not just the cutting away at the wrong moment, which they were doing with Brian constantly over a year ago, like a year and a half ago when they were doing the storyline with him and the Authority. And every week on TV, when he would go to do the running knee, they were doing it constantly with him. And as he was about to hit the knee, they would cut away. It's like, I'm sitting at home. I'm not a professional television person. And I know that he's about to hit this move. So why the fuck are you cutting away before he actually hits the move? Why would you do that? It was so annoying. And now this shaky cam and zoom in, zoom out shit that Kevin Dunn is so in love with has just got to go. Last Monday when Cena was beating the hell out of Rusev on stage, they kept zooming in and zooming out every time Cena threw a punch. Why? Does it make the punches hurt more? Does it make them look more devastating? And then whenever there's a big brawl between a bunch of people, they do the shaky cam nonsense. You'd think Muhammad Ali was shooting for them. It's just, it's terrible. I'm 100% in agreement with you. It's awful. Peter in Richmond, I assume Virginia, he doesn't say. In Mick Foley's first book, he says the spot where he falls through the Hell in a Cell in his match with Undertaker was not planned. I've always had my doubts. Do you think this is true? And if so, why wouldn't they stop the match? Here's the thing with this, okay? Foley would know best, I guess. He was there. I wasn't. But I gotta tell you, I never bought that story. I never bought that story that second fall wasn't supposed to happen. I think it was planned. Forget the fact that they didn't stop the match. Okay, forget that. There's three things here the way I look at this. First, they climbed back up on top of the cell after the initial fall. Why would they climb back up to the top after you've already been thrown off? There's no possible way to top what just happened unless you fall again, right? So you're going to climb back up? What? Only just to climb back down? That never made any sense to me. Then there's the actual chokeslam, okay? When Undertaker chokeslam, I put that in air quotes here, chokeslam. He chokeslammed Foley. He didn't chokeslam Foley, okay? It was more of a shove down or a throw down than it was a real chokeslam. Go back and watch it, okay? He kind of throws him backwards. Foley falls backwards. Had the cage not broken, as awful as that chokeslam looked, had the cage not broken, it would have looked terrible. It would have looked like a botch. It would have looked awful. And then you got to keep in mind how this whole thing was shot, okay? Watch that spot again. Right before, you could tell I've watched this match on the network recently. Right before Undertaker throws Foley down for the chokeslam and he falls through, the hard camera cuts to a wide shot and slowly starts to zoom out just at the right moment to catch Foley's fall. They knew he was falling through, or there was a very good chance that he was falling through. They knew. Terry Funk doing an improvised spot with Undertaker in the ring doesn't prove anything. Terry Funk was stalling for time in the ring because Mick Foley was legit knocked out by the fall, which he was. You know, he hit the mat. I think the chair may have fallen and hit him in the head on the way down because there was a chair up there that fell too. He was legit knocked loopy by that fall, and they had to stall for time. Funk was already out there anyway because he had come out after the first fall off the cage. So they stalled for time until Foley finally came to his senses and said he wanted to continue the match, and they let them fight. So, I mean, I think the second fall was a planned spot, and there were more than just Undertaker and or Mick Foley who was in on it, because again, the camera thing is what kills me. You know, the camera, just the wide shot, the zoom out just as he fell through. And maybe the way I look at it is it was a planned spot and they act like it wasn't because I guess it somehow adds to the legend and the mystique of the match. But I never bought that story. Tavon from Baltimore, did you see the 40th anniversary of SNL? If you did, what did you think of the show? And specifically, what did you think of Eddie Murphy's appearance? It was very disappointing. He was the main reason why most people tuned into the show. It was promoted for weeks that he was going to be on SNL 40 like it was a big deal. And all we got was a 40-second appearance of him getting a standing ovation, thanking everyone, and that was it. No sketches, no jokes, no nothing. I felt cheated. What are your thoughts? I did see the SNL 40 special. I watched all 3.5 hours. It was a long 3.5 hours. But I liked it. I mean, I enjoyed seeing a lot of the older names. Some of them were cringeworthy. Some of them, like Steve Martin and Bill Murray and guys like that, were just, you know, like they never left. Those guys are still awesome. It was like a Raw reunion special, only slightly funnier. I thought that Jeopardy bit that Will Ferrell did was the funniest part of the whole show. Daryl Hammond's Sean Connery impersonation was just fucking great. I enjoyed the interplay with Jerry Seinfeld, Larry David. I'm a big Larry David fan. The Eddie Murphy stuff was, it was a letdown, but, you know, that part of his life is over and he clearly doesn't miss it. You know, Eddie Murphy is one of the funniest comedians I've ever seen. But the reality is, he's just not funny anymore. He's lost his ability or desire to be funny. When I see this guy do interviews, when I see, you know, whenever I see him, which isn't very often because he's not in a lot of stuff anymore, he's always so serious. It's like he forgot how to laugh. He forgot the humor. You know, maybe if he put the effort in and he wanted to be, he could be funny again. But when was the last time Eddie Murphy was funny? Coming to America? Beverly Hills Cop 2? I don't know. What was the last great movie he made? A really funny movie. And don't tell me The Nutty Professor either. Okay? It's been a while. And plus, there's still bad blood there. Okay? I know he showed up, which was like a miracle all by itself. But there is still bad feelings there. You can tell there's a reason it was his first appearance on SNL in like 30 years. Ever since David Spade made that crack about him during one of their sketches. I mean, that was years ago, and this guy has never gotten over it. he didn't really want to be there. It was obvious he didn't really want to be there. I don't even know why he agreed to be there. You know, did he even come out at the end with everybody else? I don't remember seeing him in there at the end. Actually, that reminds me. You know what my biggest letdown of that whole show was? It wasn't even Eddie Murphy. My biggest letdown of the show was no Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken on SNL is like the greatest thing ever. Everyone talks about the cowbell skit, but he did a skit called The Continental that I loved. And he wasn't even on the show. And you know, I'm all disappointed, but I'm like, all right, what are you going to do, right? He's not there. Maybe he's busy. He's old now. Maybe he's in poor health. And then all the stars come out on stage at the end when the credits are rolling. And who do I see on stage? Christopher Walken. Right there. On stage. Are you kidding me? He was there and you didn't use him? What a waste. What a waste. But otherwise, that aside, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. It also made me realize how much funnier that show used to be. And also how much I miss Chris Farley. They actually have an app called SNL 40. It's free. It gives you access to every skit they've ever done. I found out about this during the week. It's actually really cool. I was never like a huge SNL fan where I watched every week, but I have memories of some of the older sketches, and I'm always wondering, you know, they're not all on YouTube. Everything I've looked for so far in this app, they have. You bring the video up right there in the app. I don't think you can fast forward and rewind, but it plays right there. You just put the name of the sketch in or the person's name, the celebrity's name. It's just this huge database of most, if not all, of the segments they've ever done that's in the app. So it's really cool if you want to check it out. It's called SNL 40. It's free. Check it out. Let's get to the PayPal shout-outs this week. Again, I moved them to post-mailbag, and I want to do something fun here because I got a ton of PayPal donations from you guys. You can always make a donation on thesolemonster.com. You'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. That is the easiest, most direct way to support this podcast is to make a direct donation, and I appreciate the hell out of you for it when you do. $10 or more, get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. $30 or more, you can get that same nickname and shout-out, but also a quick plug if you got your own podcast. Again, it has to be your own show. You can't, you know, expect that you're going to be able to plug somebody else's show. I have a whole list of names here, and we're going to do this Royal Rumble style. You ready for this? Here we go. There we go. That's the old-school Rumble music that I miss. Tori, All I Do Is Win Johansson. No Surrender, Omar Sumter. Dynamite, Dorian Hunter. Killer, Keron Francis. The Marietta Mahler, Alexandru Mata. Out of Control, Cody Thomas. Ladies Man, Levi Daly. Luis Hercules Hernandez. The Prime Minister of Pain, Von Bowen. Hot Stuff, Hector Pena. Light 'em Up, Lamont Ambler. Bounty Hunter, Brian Collins. Keith the Conqueror, Krajnik. Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson. Terrifying Terrence Hickman. Josh the Pimp Kemp. Superkick King Matt Jackson. Steven Will You Stop Willis. John Rampage Rosario. Deadlocked David Walters. Damn Straight Michael Dorsey. Just Try Me Travis McCoy. Joshua Boom Boom Bryant. Jeremy All That All Britain. Brett Brickfist Broad. And Cut 'em Up Kieran Callum, who has a podcast called Never Call Saul that's available right now on iTunes for you to listen to. So there you go. That was a lot of fun. I wish they would bring back those kind of intros for the actual Rumble pay-per-view. So again, make a donation on thesolemonster.com. Two quick notes here before we wrap up. I will be back with Mish and Joey Numbers on Wrestling Soup for their regular show live this Thursday, 9:30 Eastern, talking Fastlane and whatever else comes to mind. So you can listen live on WrestlingSoup.com. Or download on their feed after the fact. Also, I am going to be in attendance for Hulk Hogan Appreciation Night this Friday at the WWE show at Madison Square Garden. And so I will have full thoughts on that right here on the Sound Off next weekend. Keep following me on Twitter, at Solomonster. I'll be live tweeting during Fastlane tonight and Raw tomorrow night. And also from the Garden on Friday night. So at Solomonster is my handle on there. You can friend me on Facebook. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is the official profile page. We also have a Solomonster Sounds Off fan page that you can like in a private discussion group as well by the same name. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. Hit the subscribe button. That way, whenever some new Sound Off extras go up. You never know when. You will be the first to know about them when they do go up. There's a whole treasure trove of bonus Sound Off audio on there, including inboxes and DVD reviews, pay-per-view reviews, book reviews, interviews, lots of good stuff. So check it out right now on the YouTube channel. And that's it. We will be back here for a brand new episode next weekend with some Fastlane thoughts and whatever else goes on in the crazy world of pro wrestling. So until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy Fastlane tonight for free on the WWE Network, and we will see you right back here again for a brand new podcast next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solid Monster sounds off.
You know what annoyed me more than anything else on this show last Monday night? Instead of just calling it Fastlane, they called it WWE Fastlane.
At WWE Fastlane, I'm going to beat you.
Drove me nuts.
You and I are going to have a match at WWE Fastlane.
All night with this. Who talks like that? If aliens landed on Earth and attempted to engage a member of the WWE roster in a conversation, you know what they would think? Holy shit, these creatures are stupid. And then they would exterminate every last one of us.
The Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solid Monster sounds off. Available at thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.